Hello, welcome to the 13th episode of my short lecture series on family violence and crime. I'm Dr. Hasan Büker. In this episode, we talk about sexual violence. During several previous episodes, we talked about sexual violence in different contexts, including intimate partner violence, child abuse, sibling abuse, or elderly abuse. In this episode, we look into sexual violence within and outside the family, especially in the form of rape. In recent years, we have seen an increasing awareness and knowledge broadening the traditional definition and perceptions of rape, mostly as a crime committed by a stranger man against a woman in the form of vaginal intercourse. However, in recent years, the discussions about sexual violence included the terms like rape crisis, rape myths, date rape, marital rape, rape drugs, acquaintance rape, sexual harassment, and several other terms that we didn't include in a conventional legal discussion of sexual violence. In addition, we have started discussing male victims, female offenders, LGBTQ victims, rape crisis centers, and other support mechanisms to encourage help seeking among traditional and non-traditional victims of sexual violence. Likewise, our approach to sexual offenders has been changing with a greater focus on rehabilitating them rather than just punishing and incapacitating them. Lastly, and I think the most important improvement around the discussion of sexual violence has been society's interest and awareness on the topic. Me Too movement uncovered many untold stories and encouraged more and more victims to speak up and seek help or justice for their victimization. On college campuses and workplaces, we have seen an increasing effort to educate individuals to prevent sexual violence and encourage reporting if it happens. Sexual violence, a broad topic under our subject matter, has various aspects that require deeper and further conversations in modern society. In this episode, we will talk only about some of those in a very limited time. Generally, sexual violence is a crime in which women are the victims, but those of any gender or sex, including men, may also be victims. This chapter examines abusive actions that are perpetrated by those persons, as well as strangers or persons with whom victims have professional rather than personal relationships. Often these acts are perpetrated in a social and cultural context that continues to fail to adequately protect women from degradation. Sexual violence against women traditionally has been viewed as a stranger rape, as I mentioned at the beginning, a violent, forceful sexual assault on a female. Only recently has society begun to recognize other forms of sexual violence. It's not acknowledged that spouses may be raped, and acquaintance rape has become a common term. In addition, other forms of sexual violence are more subtle, but just as damaging. Sexual harassment and sexual discrimination are still rampant in the modern world. To define sexual violence by any of these acts is to do injustice to the whole concept that women are equal to men. A legal definition of sexual violence focuses on certain conduct that is prohibited and strictly defined. A medical definition views sexual violence as injury to the body. A psychological evaluation of sexual violence, on the other hand, examines the effect on the mind and emotions of the victim. Each of these approaches has certain strengths and weaknesses, and what we know is approaching to the concept of sexual violence from only one of those directions will simply be inadequate to explain, to understand, and prevent the concept in the long run. Sexual violence can happen to any person, as I mentioned at the beginning. It can happen at any time, in any place. No one is completely secure from this type of assault. We know that in the recent years, men started to speak up as the victims of rape. Or we have recently seen a lot of cases in which the victims and the perpetrators cannot be defined as with a certain sexual orientation. And determining the exact nature and the extent of sexual violence is a complex and difficult process. And one of the problems in that area is the lack of an agreement among scholars, researchers, and professionals on definition and research methodology. Some scholars use the term rape, others use sexual assault, and still some others define each of the foregoing terms differently. For example, one researcher may define rape as a vaginal intercourse accomplished by use of force or fear, whereas other researchers may define rape as vaginal, oral, or rectal intercourse accomplished by force or fear. The simple addition of two terms changes the entire result of any study. So this is why at the global level or at any regional level, if there is a legal discrepancy in terms of defining what rape is, we actually do not know the actual extent of the problem. In addition to issues related to the nature of that crime, as we mentioned before, it's usually hard for the victims of those types of crimes to speak up and seek help from the professionals, which is the prominent way for us to understand the extent of crime, the official rates and numbers. And there are various theories towards understanding the reasons for people to commit sexual violence. And as with other forms of family violence, a number of theories exist regarding this form of aggression, but the exact cause of sexual violence is unfortunately, as of yet, not very well understood. There are various reasons we discuss as the causes of rape, like sexual motivation, socialization, machoism, biological factors, psychological factors, or simply as a reflection of the culture of violence. And there are various types of rape. As I mentioned at the beginning, the researchers have now developed different typologies of rape in addition to that conventional perspective. For instance, they established the terms or issues like power rapes or anger rapes or anger retaliation rapes. So all of those types of rapes tells us a lot about the nature and the complexity of that very, very, very issue of sexual violence. And obviously, we know that it's a very harmful aggression on the victim's side. And the victims of rape suffer a variety of reactions, including fear and anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, social maladjustment, a decreased self-esteem, and impaired sexual functioning. And in the recent years, in addition to those generally acknowledged and studied consequences of rape, there's a new term introduced to the field, which is rape crisis syndrome. Accordingly, the syndrome occurs when the victim experiences feeling of shame, humiliation, disjointedness, anger, inability to concentrate, and withdrawal from social activities. As I mentioned before, the traditional perspective about rape actually encompasses stranger rape. And a number of myths persist regarding the crime of rape and that apply to stranger, marital, or acquaintance rape situations. Traditionally, rape has been defined as the carnal knowledge of a female, and the carnal knowledge usually is understood as cautious copulation, the act of a man having sexual bodily connections with a woman, sexual intercourse in short. But in the recent years, we have seen a broader perspective in understanding and defining rape above and beyond a penile vaginal penetration. And effective January 1st, 2013, for instance, in the United States, the Department of Justice transitioned from the definition of rape as carnal knowledge of a female forcibly and against her will to the more inclusive definition, which says penetration, no matter how slight, of the vagina or anus with any body part or object, or oral penetration by a sex organ of another person without the consent of the victim. So this new definition, which has been commonly adopted around the globe, is now used to gather statistics about this rape, which helps us to gain a more accurate understanding about the extent of the problem. But it's a much better reflection of that kind of sexual violence. Another important myth is actually regarding marital or acquaintance rape. We know that traditionally we understand rape as a crime committed by a stranger, and intimate sexual violence includes actually marital and acquaintance rape. And these forms of assault are not isolated incidents that occur to only a few victims, as opposed to our common knowledge. Rape in America reports that only 22% of all women raped were sexually assaulted by someone they had never seen before or did not know. That leaves a larger majority, which is around 7-8%, which were assaulted by someone they already know. For instance, 9% of all victims were raped by their husbands or ex-husbands, 10% by boyfriends or ex-boyfriends, and 21% by other non-relatives such as friends or neighbors, but still someone they already knew. And the remaining percentages were made up of fathers, stepfathers, other relatives, and a not sure category of 3%. Accordingly, what we know is the perpetrators are usually known to the victims in the majority of the sexual violence cases. Marital rape is another important term that we have heard, seen, and studied in the recent years, because for centuries, society has believed that a man is entitled to have sex with his wife. But the feminist movement in the 1970s sought to change the laws to allow for charges to be brought against a husband who raped his wife. And through the efforts of several dedicated groups and individuals, all around the world, again, the laws began to be amended to define marital rape as a specific crime. Many rape statutes not allow for the prosecution of a husband who rapes his wife in the earlier perceptions. However, there is no separate legal definition of marital rape in most of the jurisdictions. But the purposes of this episode, we can define marital rape as the unlawful sexual intercourse with a spouse or ex-spouse against her will by means of force or fear. And acquaintance rape, which is again similar to the previous term, is newly introduced to the field, or relatively a new term that we have started using. And again, it refers to a situation where the rapist and the victim knew each other before the crime. And although sexual aggression in dating relationships has been studied for more than 30 years, people still have problems in accepting the concept of rape by a person known to the victim. And some individuals want to believe that rape is committed only in some dark alley by a sadistic monster, and that only nice girls who resist and whose resistance was overcome by physical force can be raped. Similar to marital rape, date or acquaintance rape situations are covered by the general definition of rape set forth earlier. However, for purposes of explaining this special type of sexual violence, we can understand acquaintance rape as unlawful sexual intercourse accomplished by force or fear with a person known to the victim who is not related by blood or marriage. Another important extension towards understanding sexual violence is related to the drugs that can be used to incapacitate victims or vulnerable victims, in general. And we started to recognize those drugs during 1990s. And during that time, investigators and social institutions helping victims started reporting about victims who had been drugged or unconscious during the rape. And two of those drugs are very well known. The first one is GHB, and the other one is usually known as Rohypnol. And both of these drugs produced unconsciousness and the inability to recall recent events. Victims of these drugs report feeling sensations of drunkenness that do not correspond to the amount of alcohol ingested, unexplained physical trauma normally associated with sexual assault, and loss or altered states of consciousness. And another important term, maybe to conclude that discussion, is the sexual harassment, another type of sexual violence, but not necessarily a rape. And it's a kind of broader term under which specific forms of sexual violence take place. Most of the victims of sexual harassment, just like rape, consist of women, although it's possible that men also cannot be harassed. And usually we understand sexual harassment as a demand that a subordinate, usually a woman, as I mentioned, grants sexual favors to retain a benefit, usually related to job or education or another type of professional advancement. And a more encompassing definition defines sexual harassment as the imposition of any unwanted condition on any person's employment because of that person's sex. And under this definition, harassment might include jokes, direct taunting, disruption of work, vandalism, or destruction of property, and physical attacks. And sexual harassment occurs in a wide variety of forms, starting at the top with rape and coming down, pressure for sexual favors, sexual touching, suggestive looks or gestures, sexual joking or teasing, and the display of unwanted sexual material. And one of the most well-known forms of sexual harassment is quid pro quo harassment. And this occurs when an agent or supervisor of the employer uses their position to include a subordinate employee to grant sexual favors. The exchange of continued employment or job benefits for sex suggests the name quid pro quo, which is a Latin term, this for that. The essence of quid pro quo harassment is that the victim must choose between suffering economic disadvantage and enduring sexual advances. And in summary about sexual harassment, we know that it continues to be a form of sexual violence in the United States and other countries. And it looks like it can persist as long as men view women as sexual trophies or playthings instead of equals. And only through ongoing education can this form of sexual violence be put to an end. Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and I'm looking forward to meeting you again at the next episode. Bye.